We're talking about something about how the climate change and what's happening in general in this area is resonating with us in terms of trauma.
Yes. Yes. And that for so many people, it's an unspoken loss of trust in the universe.
Yeah.
And loss of knowing, okay, how do I even predict what the weather will be in my region in the next year? How do we predict that? And without our ancient way of predicting or thinking we know what's going to happen, we're left with, I think, as we were saying earlier, how do we create a new path where we can go to the ancients for old paths that have worked, but what will we use for this new path?
Yeah.
So how do we stay connected?
Yeah. So there's a breach of trust in the sense that we had established a trusting relationship with nature, with a sense that we could predict more or less how it would behave.
Right.
And now we don't have that.
And we could prepare. We would prepare for the winter during the summer, or we would prepare for, at least in our regions this summer, we've been so grateful for the rain because we haven't had the smoke that we've had from wildfires the last few years. So that when we see the rain, we're rejoicing now for the rain, because we used to just rejoice for the sun in our rainy climate. So it's changing our way of being in relationship to the earth and the sun and the wind. It's changing our fundamental way we're living on this planet. And I think this unrest, this uneasiness to how do I prepare, has had personal and political and global changes, an unsettling and unrest.
Yeah.
We don't know anymore.
Yeah. So it's profoundly unsettling.
Yes.
And the foundations of the world as we know it are no longer there.
Yes.
It's like walking and slipping on a banana peel, or the ground who just, steps out and you no longer have the ground holding you. That's profoundly disorienting.
Yes. I like that banana peel. I was thinking of after the earthquake, the aftershocks leave people in that sense of I'm an earth creature, but how do I reconnect with the earth because it keeps shaking me? That we're kind of in that place of being shaken continually as we hear storm warnings or as we hear political changes. Things, we don't know the normal anymore. Things are not getting back to the normal.
Mm-hmm.
And the question I think you brought up of how do we as individuals and with each other create new paths that we can sustain aliveness?
Yeah. And so creating new paths, it would be great if we had a model to follow, but in this case, we don't. We're in a state of shock. We're in a state of being shaken. We don't have the ground to sustain us. So we have to figure out how to live in that environment without that grounding.
Yes, and somehow it seems to be bigger than just one person talking to another, that we need to maybe come back into kind of groups or tribes where we sort out how we will take care of each other, how we can, just in our own community, create food forests where we have food for people that may need food that's accessible, that we grow, that we prepare for. And how do we, and maybe we are going back to ancient people of just really nurturing the environment that we do have so that there can be hospitality to the migrants, to the strangers, to the people that need a safe place that are coming from unsafe places. So how do we start to think in creative new ways in our communities?
Yeah.
Using the wisdom, I think, of what the trauma world has opened.
Yeah, yeah. So the trauma world has taught us to acknowledge trauma, to yes. not react to it as if we could simply overcoming with a little bit of willpower,
right.
To recognize it's something that's shaken us to the core, and to find, you know, the stability and safety from which healing is possible.
Right.
And you're saying that, you know, how can we apply this
right.
To this environment of constant change?
Yes. How do we begin to see the global trauma we're all experiencing and begin to care for each other?
Yeah.
And use these practices that you mentioned of resonance and alignment and synchronicity and connectivity to build these islands, these places or groups of people for sustainability.
Yeah.
What is essential about human beings, human existence.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that we're talking about connectivity, we're talking about, you know, little tribes, we're talking about making connection, but, you know, we're talking about it in several ways. One is in very practical ways, you know, just sharing food, sharing support, but in other ways that it is in paying attention to the experience of connection, to paying attention to the experience of attunement, of resonance, that we actually increase our sense of connection. And
yeah.
that comes as a countervailing factor to the trauma.
Yes. So that as we develop this, as we were talking about resilience or bigger, then we have something that comes from the essence of being human on this planet, that we're depending upon to be our guide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that and that essential quality that we have, that humanity, is that ability to connect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and to reflect, and mm-hmm. to be intentional, and to cherish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
yeah. So to connect, to reflect, to cherish.
Yeah. yeah. And to cherish aliveness given all the experiences we have no knowledge of to bring the wonder to the storm.
Yeah. So you said that to cherish aliveness. Given the experiences that, or the, you know, where we have no knowledge of, no certainty about,
right.
you know, and so that is, you know, a very vivid sense of keeping, you know, keeping grounded in the eye of the storm, finding something that is our center, you
yeah.
know, when all else is actually in turmoil.
Exactly. And just as you were saying earlier, when we meet that and face that, then something new opens.
Mm-hmm.
So that instead of the fear of the climate change, we grow the strength and the stability between us, within us, between us, to be able to perhaps thrive in this new environment.
Yeah. And of course, it makes sense that as we are humbled by something that's so much bigger than ourselves, that the magnitude of these changes, then it makes sense for us to connect and be part of something larger that helps us deal with that trauma.
And face it, as we were talking about it, how to be in it, with it, and feel the wholeness of life within it.
Yeah. And so I find it very useful that you bring this conversation with the model of trauma, because one thing we do in trauma is we make sure that people are grounded, have a sense of connection to something that is a resource, something that helps being feeling safe, instead of just pushing into the difficulty. Just keeping going into the trauma without having that is simply re-traumatizing.
And the work of relational somatic work, where we really create the safety in the context of that subjectivity, inner subjectivity, that here's our first safety, is another human being that can actually resonate with my pain, with my fear.
Yeah.
Be here with me in this, and then I'm not alone.
Yeah. So very, very, very powerful is something that we have the experience that there is another human being who can resonate with my pain, with my hurt, with my fear. And so I'm not alone with my pain, my hurt, or my fear.
Right. And if we're not alone, then the wonder of connectivity has occurred. And there is now the possibility of the opening, of the trust, of a new way.
Yeah. So in those circumstances in which actually we naturally go into fear and lack of trust, is actually the possibility of us being, in a way, having no choice but to go to rebuilding, to strengthening, to putting a mindful focus on, to put our intentionality in fostering that which connects us.
That's
what is going to give us that ability to deal with the magnitude of the trauma.
That's right. And to maybe, as we keep kind of imagining, maybe we could imagine the trauma community, those people like you that are helping us to connect with each other, can start to name this as an important trauma that all the other traumas seem to kind of fall in line with now. That people, we're not talking about it in our, that I've heard. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear each of us really going in and saying, how does that fear live in me? Does it live in me? And how does it shift my daily presence in the world?
Yeah. So a very specific question that you're asking, that we ask ourselves, how does that fear live in me?
Yeah.
And so there's something about, there is something happening at such a large scale, the whole world, you know, and at the same time, you know, there's something that experience is in me.
Go ahead.
Connection, how does that fear live in me?
And it needs to. I mean, we need to know that a healthy fear, without a healthy fear, we wouldn't be able to respond.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we face that fear? Again, coming back to our earlier conversation, how do we face that fear together? not just alone.
Yeah.
And imagine out of that fear how we can prepare.
Yeah, so how do we face that fear? And one of the things we know about fear is that it kind of disorganizes us, it takes over, and so it has a tendency to separate us as opposed to unite us.
That's right.
Or to unite us in a bad way of us against them and blaming and targeting. And so there is a very conscious effort to be aware of that.
Yes.
We're not talking about just letting the fear do its work, because left to its own devices, it probably is not going to lead us in a good place.
It's a contagion.
Mm-hmm.
When it's unconscious, it takes over and comes into all sorts of elements of our experience that divides us. And to speak it and acknowledge, I think you used the word humility, mm-hmm. to acknowledge, I do have fear, I do wonder, I do worry. I worry about my grandchildren, their lives, their experience, their children. I worry about, and how do I take that out of my individual worrying and put it into a community of normalizing it? Because that's the social engagement piece that Porges is talking about. How do we bring this out of our own sympathetic arousal, out of our own personal obsession, and bring it into a community, a tribe, a group, a structure that has ancient ways that one person can respond in this way and another person can respond in this way. And we bring those multiple ways together and we have new networks.
Yeah, yeah. And so I want to slow down a bit, because it feels like there's a lot of different ideas that are there.
Oh.
And one of them is the sense that we tend to function on an individual model of what it's like to be a human being, one person psychology. And so from that one person psychology, we are thinking about, okay, I have fear, how do I contain it? And in that sense, other people are accessories in the role of the one person psychology. But what you're describing is actually something that's much more like distributed processing for computers. And I'm not just a lonely computer, and to understand me, you only have to focus on the computer. But you have to have that sense of what a distributed computer networking is.
Yeah.
And so if I am part of this network, then I need to shift the attention from a one-person psychology to understanding that as a human being, I am part of the distributed processing, and that the distributing processes is going to give me and all of us resources to fight a problem that is larger than myself.
That's right. And I love the metaphor of the computer. It gives us such a network.
Mm-hmm.
We can visualize that. And I think going back to some of our earlier comments in the conversation, we also have the way that Indigenous peoples throughout the globe have operated on a social engagement level for millennia. I mean, for Darsha Narvis at Notre Dame talks about how 99.9% of civilization happened because we lived in tribes. We lived in groups that we sustained each other. And in the tribes and the networks that could work together and collaborate and cooperate, that there was thriving for generations. In fact, the historian Morris Berman looked at somatic cultures throughout history in his book, Come to Our Senses. And the somatic cultures that could work from the cellular level and could embody their experience, were the cultures that thrived with human values.
Mm.
And I mean, he actually developed the term somatic experiencing, Morris Berman. If we somatically experience our aliveness in the world, then, and cultures that do that, communities that do that, thrive despite change. And I think that was one of the first books I ever read on somatics, and it still is the vision I'm holding of how it can rebind us together.
Yeah. So this is a perfect example of how the past,
yes,
can give us a model for dealing with the present, even though the situation is not the same and there's a lot of uncertainty. And the specific example that it gives is that notion of facing,
yes,
the danger,
yes,
in a somatic way.
Yes.
And in connection.
And in connection. In community.
In community.
A community of the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Like the networks of computers.
Right. This is part of the Relational Implicit podcast. To see more and subscribe to the newsletter, go to relationalimplicit.com.